The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
What I'm doing today is we're going to begin Mishle and talk about the first lesson that Mishle teaches us. Now, King Solomon, who is the son of King David, wrote three very famous books. Okay? He wrote Koheles, which is called Ecclesiastes. He wrote Mishle, which is commonly referred to as Proverbs. And he wrote Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs. Okay? And each book really expresses a different, and was written at a different time in his life. Ecclesiastes was written in his old age. Okay? And if I'm not mistaken, Song of Songs was written as a youth, and the book Proverbs was really middle age. Alright, so let's begin to read. Mishle, now as we mentioned a little bit this morning, there are three parts to the Tanakh. The scriptures, right? There is the Torah, the five books of Moses. There is the Nevi'im, which is the prophets. And then there is what's called the Ketubim, right? The writings. And this is part of the Ketubim. All right. Mishle Shlomo ben David Melech Israel. Proverbs. Mishle is generally translated as Proverbs, right? But a mashal is a parable. That's what a mashal is. So if I were to say something like, the moon, a silver dollar, glittering, and right? So you know that it's not really a silver dollar, it's just a parable. There's something about a silver dollar that somehow helps me sense what that was. Alright? Or if I say, she's simply a butterfly. Right? So obviously, no one would think that I met somebody who's got wings. But rather that there's something about a butterfly that expresses and there's something about that butterfly that if I, in a parable way, allegorical way, gives me a sense of what she is, that the gracefulness of her or whatever. Alright? So that's what a mashal is. That's what a mashal is. And so there are mashalim. There are various parables in the book. Not everything he's saying is to be understood face value. He will later on tell us that it also is to be understood at face value, but it also has an inner meaning, an allegorical meaning. So for instance, he will call Torah a fine woman, refers to Torah as a woman. On the other hand, he will refer to heresy as a prostitute, right? And so if he says something like, beware of the prostitute, well then we take that for face value also, beware of the prostitute, but also something about prostitution enables me to understand what the real inner meaning of what heresy is to the Jewish people. Alright? So heresy, generally people think, oh, a person doesn't believe. No, there's obviously something more to it when Judaism talks about heresy. So, there are mashalim. There's a book full of various parables. And it takes a tremendous wise person to find the parable. Okay? That is one of the challenges of a teacher, which is to find some kind of story or to find some kind of parable in your life which can in some way enable you to access the experience of what we're talking about. Because it's on a higher level than I can really convey. So I have to find something that in some parable way or comparable way, but it's not really comparable, but it's parable to it, right? I'm able to convey this. And King Solomon was one of the greatest educators. And we, in the last program, did Koheles, and I think you got a taste of that. So Mishle, the parables or the proverbs of Shlomo ben David, Solomon, the son of David, Melech Yisrael, the king of Israel. It's clear, and all the commentaries see it this way, that this first verse is basically establishing who our author is. Okay? Who is our author? Shlomo. What does Shlomo mean for us? The man of prophetic knowledge. Because Shlomo had a very high level of consciousness. Shlomo, when we say Shlomo, we don't think of a PhD person, you know, a professor. That's not what Shlomo means for us. Not that that's something not important, but just that's not what Shlomo means for us. Shlomo means someone who has access to prophetic knowledge. But then again, it's not just Shlomo, it's Ben David, the son of David. And this tells us more about our author and the source of these writings, which is essential in Judaism. Not only what's being written, but who wrote it. Because who wrote it makes a tremendous difference to what's being written. And we talked about that this morning. That we do not separate wisdom from the wise, nor or the wise from the moral. They're all together. And therefore, to learn wisdom, you should learn it from a person who is wise. And so Solomon, King Shlomo, on one hand, is a prophet. But in addition to that, you should know that he is the son of David. And that gives us even more credentials to who the man is. Because although he is quite astounding in his own right, even more than that, he is the son of David, who himself was a great, great holy person. And therefore, King Solomon has the advantage of tradition. Okay? Tradition. He not only has the prophetic knowledge, but he also has, he is linked into the chain of the tradition of truth. And that's very important in Judaism. Very, very important in Judaism. In fact, we say a very similar thing in our prayer. We say, Eloheinu ve'Elohei Avoteinu, our God and the God of our fathers. There's something that's important in terms of your own knowledge of God, but your own knowledge of God must have a history, otherwise it will really not have much long-lasting life. And therefore, the God of our fathers, there is that personal encounter with God, and yet that same God must be understood and experienced as part of a chain that has evolved and has developed. And in the merit of being connected to that, that gives me even more weight to what I have to say. But more than that, this is not only Solomon, and this is not only Solomon, the son of David, but this is the king of Israel. And therefore, you know, there are many wise people who say wise things in a void. But they have not been challenged. They have not been in the public sector whereby their words that they have said really have to stand the test of a community. And a community of so many, many different people. You know, they say a story, I believe about Chaim Weizmann, who was one of the first presidents. Perhaps he was the first president of Israel. Do you remember? I don't. But anyways, I think he was in America. And he turned to, I think it was Truman, and he says, President Truman, what is it like to be the president of so many people? So President Truman said, wow, that's a fascinating question. I mean, you're the president of Israel. He says, no, no. He says, you're the president of many people. But when you're the president of Israel, you are the president of many presidents. Okay? And therefore, it's a little different when you're the president of Israel, because in Israel, everybody considers himself the president. Okay? And so too over here, this is not only King Solomon, this is not only King Solomon, the son of David, but this is a man who really had to be the king of Israel and the various challenges, and therefore his words, his proverbs, which he would say over and over again, are well tested in a community which is extremely opinionated, and things don't fly so easily around here. So this is our credentials. Who is our author? Who is our source? Alright. Verse 2. Ledat chachma umusar lavin imre bina. To know wisdom and musar. Musar is discipline. Okay? The word musar is also ethics. Musar is ethics. But what's really the root of the word? The root of the word is connected to the word asur, or asir. What is an asir? Maybe you might have been involved in the, during the real push for Russian Jewry. So there was something called asire tzion. A Russian Jew wanted to come to Zion, was called an asir tzion. So what is an asir? A prisoner. Asir. Asur is something that is forbidden. What has it got to do with Musar? It's all part of the same idea. It's something that's contained. Okay? Something that is defined. It could be to the extent of being confined. Alright? So what does it truly mean to have Musar? It is a person who has discipline. Because a person could have wisdom, but they don't have the ability to control themselves. Simply control themselves. To take their wisdom and apply it through the self-control that it takes to really live it. Alright? So, the purpose of his book is now being revealed to us. Who wrote it? Solomon, the son of David, the king of Israel. What is the purpose of his book? He tells us the purpose of his book. The purpose of his book is to know wisdom. What does it know? What does it mean? Well, let's read a few verses. To know wisdom and discipline, lahavin imrei binah, to understand statements of understanding, lakachat musar haskel, to take musar haskel, and musar once again is ethics, haskel is comprehensive. Musar haskel tzedek u'mishpat u'meisharim. One way of translating this is Musar Eskel is the discipline of insight regarding tzedek, justice, mishpat, righteousness, meisharim is straightness or equity. That's how it's translated. But we'll get to the conceptual of it in a second. I just want to go through the purpose of the book. Alright? So the purpose is to know wisdom, number one, and discipline, to understand statements, and to take ethical insight regarding these three qualities, which is called tzedek, mishpat, meisharim. So it's to know, to understand, and to take. Now let's understand it. What is chachma? What does chachma mean? Well, there's a number of different understandings of it. I will share with you what I think it means, based on my knowledge. Chachma is not wisdom necessarily in terms of being a wise person. Chachma is more than that. Chachma is a priori knowledge. Knowledge that one does not deduce empirically. Alright? For instance, love is not an empirical knowledge. You are born in the world with the knowledge of love. And now that you have it, you may see it in the world. Okay? But if I see two people walking down the street, arm in arm, alright? So then what do I see? I can say, oh, look, you know, love. The person beside me says, no, this man is choking this person. No, he's not joking, this person. No, this is love. What are you talking about? It's violence. Right? That, in fact, he's probably taking that person to prison. No. It's love. Now, prove it to me. It's not empirical. It's an inner knowing that I've been born with. Right? You were born with the knowledge of love, and you were born with the knowledge of reverence, and you are born with the knowledge of faith. These are things that you are born with. This is a priori knowledge, which you do not deduce from the world. In fact, much of the world goes counter to that very knowledge. Okay? And yet you know it from inside. And you know it so deeply that love is a reality. And you can see it. But not with your external eyes. You can see a mother holding a child. So what do you see? Person holding little person. Right? Or you can say, I see love. No, I see person holding other person. So we can see love. We come towards the world with a priori knowledge. Knowledge which has been given and instilled within us. Okay? And really the question is how to apply that knowledge. Right? How to really see, yeah, that's love. No, that's not love. Right? That's not love. Two people could be walking down the street holding hands. You could see, that's love. You might say, no, that's not love. So chachma is a given knowledge. Right? It's a given knowledge. Ledat chachma, what does it mean, ledat chachma? Dat is an intimate realization of something. Okay? As you know, in the story of the Garden of Eden, it says, and man knew his wife. Right? Wink, wink, say no more. We know what that means. Right? Why is the most intimate relationship referred to in Judaism as dat, knowledge, to know her? Okay? Because to know, you know, in English, I mean, you know, I have information. Not in Judaism. Dat is not information. Okay? Rather, dat is realization. An intimate connection with something. Okay? So, you know, I am born with the knowledge of love. You see it. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing to see how my son, who's only 2 years old, knows love. He just knows love. He knows how to give love. It's just remarkable. Just remarkable. And you just see the soul is born with certain prior knowledge. But even though you know love, you might not have yet come to realize love. And that takes a long time to realize what love really is. Okay? What love really is. And when you realize what love really is, so what is King Solomon going to give us? The purpose of his book is Ledat Chachma, to come to a realization of a priori knowledge, true inner wisdom, umusar, and ethical values, which is once again not something which is empirical, you know. That knowledge of being righteous, right? That there is something called righteousness, and that is something very important and something very valuable that I don't get from the world, I get from my soul. And my soul comes into the world already knowing this, already seeking this, already expecting this, right? It's the same thing with meaning. There's nothing in this world that really suggests to me from an empirical point of view that anything's meaningful over here. In fact, the world suggests quite the opposite. Because scientifically, I'm worth much less than 1/5 billionth of a speck of dust. What could be meaningful to that? So from a quantitative point of view, I'm really nothing and there could be no value. And yet, there's something inside me that knows I'm valuable, you're valuable, this mona is valuable. Prove it to me. Show it to me. Put it under a microscope and we'll investigate that. Meaning is something which is an a priori knowledge that is given, that I am born with, that I know not from the world, but I know from myself. Okay. So, but ledat, to know this is to get in touch with it in a very deep, intimate way. And to know the musar, those ethical values which I am born with a sense for, I have to come to realize these things. And this is what King Solomon is saying, claiming that his book can accomplish for us. To help us really get in touch with the chachma and the musar. Then, once I've come to realization, then the next thing this book is going to provide for us is lahavin. Lahavin, which means to understand, or lahavin is translated as understanding. But if you look at the real word of lahavin, it comes from the word ben, or bain. What does bain mean? Between. Lahavin is to be able to discern. Okay, that's what lahavin means. Chachma is a general knowledge, a general understanding. I might realize love, but I haven't yet been able to truly articulate it and almost break it up into its components and have that distinguishing eye to really formulate it. And therefore, what he is claiming is that his book will provide us first a realization of the a priori wisdom and ethical principles, number one. Number two, to give us the binah, the ability to discern, to distinguish, and to articulate imre bina, statements, formulae of true bina, of understanding. The word bina also comes from the word binyan, which means to build. It's a structure. Okay? So I might know love, but I'm not able to really articulate some of the fine points of when it's really being revealed and when it's not really being revealed. And he's claiming that this is a book that's going to give you that. In addition, my book will not only give you realization, my book will not only give you the discerning abilities, the articulating, the formulating, but it will give you lakachat, and through it you will take, you will acquire something, you will acquire a certain skill of disciplined insight. Okay? So therefore, it will give you not only a realization and a deep formulation, but it will basically enable you to acquire very practical skills in applying this discipline of comprehension, musar, skill regarding tzedek, justice. Now, the Masuda David, which is a commentary, says that tzedek is really referring to righteousness vis-a-vis my relationship to God.
Okay.
Umishpat is referring to values and rightness vis-a-vis my relationship to human beings. And Me'ashirim is from the word yashar, which means what? What does yashar mean?
Straight.
It'll give me a certain straightness in contrast to being crooked. When you see a person who's a crook, what does it mean? There's something bent out of here. There's something not straight. Okay? It's a flaw in their attributes, in their character. So King Solomon makes a tremendous claim for his book over here. It's going to offer you realization, formulation, and it's going to come down, it is going to enable you to acquire a skill called Musar Haskel, disciplined insight regarding the three various principles that life is based on. The rightness in terms of my relationship to God, the rightness in terms of that which would be right and appropriate in my relationship with people, and just that, you know, and that very self that is in the middle of those two relationships, which is my very straightness of myself. Wow. Now he tells us who the book's for. Okay? It's just brilliant how he writes this. Letet lepta'im arma. In order to give to the pta'im. Now, pta'im, commentary say, it comes from the word patui. You know what lefatem means? Lefatem means to seduce somebody. Okay? So therefore, a person who is, you might say, easily seduced would be a person who is, what would you call them? What? Gullible, right. Vulnerable, naive. Okay? Naive kind of people. Who is this book for? Well, it's to give to the pta'im, the naive, the inexperienced, right? Who are easily vulnerable and easily seduced. Arma. Shrewdness. All right? If you study my book, and I don't believe King Solomon is telling you, as we talked about this morning, that if you study my book and understand it, you're going to get this. No, the very process of figuring out and grappling with it is going to also give you this. All right? But it's for those naive and experienced types who are easily seduced, perhaps easily seduced, some commentators say, by their yetzara, their bad inclinations. And so this will give them arema, shrewdness. Now, you know, the word arum is the word that was used in describing the snake in the Garden of Eden, right? That he was the most arum. He was the most sly of all animals. And it's very interesting that there is a passage in the Talmud that says that you have to learn to be sly in your service for God. Okay? It's a very strange word. But the way it's explained is you have to know how to almost manipulate yourself. All right. For instance, person wakes up in the morning. Well, class is coming up soon, but then there's that kind of inclination that says to me, it's cold out. You haven't had enough sleep. You know? And then of course it's very bright, says to you, and really, you deserve a good sleep. And in fact, if you just sleep another 5 minutes, you're gonna just have more energy. more clarity. And you'll just do better in class. You know? Okay? Now, what do you do with that? Well, this is what you do. Don't say, no, Torah is more important. No, I've got to get up. No, Rabbi Aaron is going to get angry. No, don't say that.
Okay.
All right? But this is what you should say. You say to your bad inclination, you say, you got a point there. I like your style. I'm just going to get up to go to the bathroom. I'll be right back. Okay? That's the way it works. So if you're about to study Torah, but there's something inside saying, no, go out and have fun. Don't do this. So you don't fight it. You manipulate it. You say, you're absolutely right. But you know what? I just feel so much better if I just learn even just for 2 minutes. Right? And then I'll be right with you. Right? And then I can guarantee that it'll turn into about 10, which could turn into 20. And so there's actually, the Gemara says, that you have to sometimes know how to manipulate yourself. All right, to get yourself to do what you really want to do sometimes. So the Pta'im are the vulnerable. And he's saying that it's going to give you this arma, this kind of slyness, this shrewdness, which is essential to protect yourself and to guide yourself and to get where you really want to go. But it's also linar. It's also for the nar. Now, nar is an adolescence. It comes from the word linair. You know what linair means? Linair means to shake up. Linair something is to shake up. And so why is a lad called a nar? Because they're, you know, very jumpy. It's hard for a kid to sit in one place, okay? There's a certain agitation to the personality, okay? Agitation to the personality. And therefore the nar, this book is going to give a shrewdness, certain slyness to the naive. And for the nar, who is not naive, but simply young. You know, young. So the young needs knowledge and mizima, which is sound thinking. So the book's good for, you might call it an even older age. All right, it'll be good for a very young, vulnerable, naive type. But for someone who is older than that, not naive, but is somewhat adolescent and somewhat agitated, you know, agitated, a little inexperienced, well then it's going to give you knowledge and mizima, which means thoughtfulness. Okay. Yishma chacham, and not only am I saying this book is for, you might say, the novice, but for the pros. Yishma chacham, the wise will hear it if they hear what I have to say, v'yosef lekach, and it will add to them lekach, tremendous amount of knowledge and lessons. All right? V'navon, and a person who's navon, a person who has that distinguishing ability already, they're going to come away with tachbulot yikneh. You know, various skills and ways. So really what he's promised is a fantastic PR campaign over here. He's basically presented his credentials. He has told us what the book is for, in terms of its purpose, what it will accomplish. He's also told us who its intended audience, which is everybody, you know? And everybody at whatever level they're at will get what they need from this book, alright? Whether you're the naive, or whether you're somewhat the young and inexperienced, or whether you're really one of the pro chachamim, a wise person, or whether you've really brought that wisdom down even to very formulated ideas, it'll give you a lot of abilities and a lot of tachbulot, which are like strategies. Tachbulot, like strategies, you know, in life, real strategies in life. Great book. All right. And now he's going to tell us his method. How does he do this? All right. How does he do this? Lahavin mashal umilitza. To understand, to articulate, to formulate. Mashal u'militza, parable, and militza, well, it's translated, I think, how do they translate it in your book? Maybe poetic expression? What?
Proverb.
No, proverb is mishle. What's militza?
Riddles.
Oh, alright. Well, the truth is that the commentaries explain that mashal is parable, and militza is what's called nimshal. What is nimshal? There's the parable and what it's referring to. Okay? For instance, there's the butterfly, and then there's the person it was referring to. And if I say, well, he was, you know, a butterfly, well, so then, not really a butterfly, but there's something about butterfly, and so the person is what's called the nimshal, and the parable is the mashal. So we will do this through understanding mashal and melitza. We will understand the mashal. The parable itself has meaning. It's to be taken at face value also, you know. And also the melitza, what it's referring to. And to understand divrei chachamim v'chidotam. So the way the Malbim explains this is he's saying that this is going to be through understanding the parables and what the parables are referring to vis-a-vis the written Torah. For instance, the Malbim says, like the Nachash, like the snake in the Garden of Eden. The snake can be understood in an allegorical way. But what is the snake referring to? So the snake is referring to, according to some commentaries, as the bad inclination. You know, the tree of knowledge. Well, it can be understood in a metaphorical way, an allegorical way. And there were various commentaries who did see the whole story in the Garden of Eden as an allegory. All right? And the truth is that most understand it to be both true, being accurate historically, and yet still allegorical. And that's a very interesting idea. The Judaism claims that the entire Torah is both accurate historically and yet still allegorical. And therefore, when you read the Zohar will say that, yes, Sarah is a person, but Sarah also represents the soul. You know? And yes, Avimelech is a person, but Avimelech represents the bad inclination. Okay? And so too, when we read the story of Yonah the prophet, who didn't want to go and rebuke this country, Nineveh, and he runs away and gets swallowed by a whale, right? So we understand it in a historical way, and we also understand it as in an allegorical way, that really Yonah is the soul, and the whale is the body, and there's all kinds, you know. So there's various levels to the Torah. And so he's saying we're going to do this by understanding mashal and melitza of the written Torah, and the divrei chachamim, the words of the rabbis, which is the oral tradition, v'chidotam, and their riddles. Okay? Because when you read the Agada, when you read the various passages in the Talmud, which is called Agada, which is non-halakhic information, okay? But it goes into all kinds of sometimes very bizarre stories. Right? You realize immediately that this is allegorical. And they have basically engarbed some secrets in this riddle over here. And so he's saying that this is how we're going to do it. We're going to do it through Torah. That's my method. That's my approach. Okay? That's my source. Okay? It will be Torah. So what King Solomon has offered us is his credentials, the source, the author, the purpose of the book, who it is for, and the method, the approach of the book. Alright? And that's how the book starts. And now the book starts. Alright? Now the book starts. Yirat Hashem. Yirat Hashem Reshit Dat. Chachma. I told you that my book is going to give you realization of Chachma. Of those, that a priori knowledge. That inner knowledge. Well, I want you to know that the foundation of that, the beginning of that, is Yirat Hashem. Now, Yirat Hashem can be translated in numerous ways, and all of the ways are appropriate. Yirat literally means fear. Okay? But there's still a difference because there's another word for fear, which is, do we know in Hebrew, fear? Pachad. It's also fear. Pachad is, right? Lafkid mishu, is to frighten somebody. Okay? There's another word for fear, ema, which is a kind of threat, you know, an overwhelming feeling of maybe being endangered. Alright? Yirat is not feeling endangered necessarily, it's not pachad, so we have to be very careful, because the whole notion of fear of God is a notion which can be so easily misconstrued, and unfortunately already has been. Okay? In fact, Rav Kook explains that Yirat Hashem, the fear of God, needs Yirat Hashem, the fear of God. Okay? That even when one is involving themselves in acquiring the attribute of fearing God, Alright? Well then, one must have a prerequisite, which is the fear of God. Because if you don't have the proper fear of God, you may take the notion of fear of God and totally misconstrue it and do something very destructive with it. Alright? So it's a very serious, very volatile concept, the whole notion of fear of God. Alright? Now, what does it literally mean? It spans the spectrum. Yirat Hashem can be translated as fear of God. It can also be translated as reverence for God, and can also be translated as awe for God. And each translation is correct, dependent upon what level of consciousness you're at. Okay? What level of consciousness you're at. And it's very fascinating. Very fascinating. First of all, it's important to know that Yira is a natural character. A natural character within us. On the lowest level, on the lowest end of the spectrum of how elastic this word Yira is, it's fear. It's fear. We are born in the world with a knowledge for fear. Okay? It's natural. Okay? Children have it. When a child goes out into the world and they see cars and buses and people, you see, they get a little nervous, you know? They feel threatened, they feel frightened, it's such a big world. Alright? And the scare, because they're afraid of getting hurt, is a natural inclination with the human being to protect oneself. So on the lowest level of the spectrum, Yirat Shemayim means fear, but not fear of God, but Yirat Onish. It literally means fear of punishment. I don't want to be punished. Alright? I don't want to be punished. But on a higher level, it means awe. And you might say that the child comes out in the world, and because they're so inexperienced, the hustle and bustle world frightens them. And they feel threatened. And they feel that somehow endangered. Okay? But as they grow up, they can transform that and feel awe. Right? Feel awe for the world. Right? When they go out, they are in awe. But that awe makes them frightened. But as they get used to it and understand it better, it's not frightening. It's very uplifting and exciting. So you can see how this word actually can evolve with you throughout your life. Okay? Really evolve with you throughout your life. But all the meanings of it are valid and appropriate. So let's deal with the lowest level of it. What does it mean? Reishit, Yirat Hashem Reishit Dat Chachma. The beginning of knowledge, of wisdom, is fear. All right? Why? Well, in a simple way, what will preserve one's intellectual honesty and integrity? Right? If there's no higher power which I feel I'm accountable to, and can ultimately be liable for what I say. So then, I could say anything. Right? I could say anything. If you meet a person who's a scientist, but they really don't have that sense of, you know, deep-seated sense that, hey, there is a judge in the world, and you are accountable for what you say, that person doesn't have that. Right? Then how can they be relied upon? How can they even rely upon themselves? All right. Now, as I mentioned before, Yira is a natural attribute that everyone has. There's no one in the world that doesn't have a fear. You're born in the world with fear. It's part of healthy life. Okay? Everyone's born in the world with the knowledge of and the attribute for love. Everyone's born in the world with faith. It's a natural attribute of all human beings. And so, everyone is born in the world with fear. The question is, what do you apply it to? Everybody's going to fear something. You have to decide what to fear. And what to fear really is essential because it might, in fact, release you of foolish fears. Do you understand this? In other words, Judaism sees, when Judaism says and promotes fearing God, it's a tool in order to liberate you from fearing people. Right? freeing kings, mortal kings. That was the understanding of it. It was never this, oh gee, I live my life, but he's going to get me. Right? But rather, I invest my natural attribute of fear in the fear of God, because that is the most productive place to put it. And that in fact becomes a tool which enables me, right, to liberate me from other fears, which are really foolish fear, and very unproductive and perhaps most probably destructive fears. But the truth is, we're all looking for even some way to express fear. It's like when you go into these amusement parks, okay? I mean, I just sometimes wonder why people go on some of these things. Because the more frightening the contraption, the longer the lines. You know, the longer the lines. And, you know, we were in an amusement park in Toronto. My wife loves this stuff, right? My wife jumped out of planes when she was in the Army. She loves this kind of stuff. In fact, when they asked, you know, who wants to go first, my wife said, I will. Which is actually the most frightening, because you see the ground. When you jump after somebody, you see the person underneath you, so they kind of in the back of your mind feel, well, if my parachute doesn't open, I'll fall on him. Not so bad, right? But, you know, you really see the whole thing, and she just said, and there were these big, huge guys, she said that, literally, no, 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 and the instructor had to peel their fingers off the doorway and push the guy out. Right, but she loves the fear. She loves it. It's not like she was not afraid, but it gives, you know, she enjoys like the excitement of life that it gets you in touch with. So fear can be a very positive, very, very positive experience. Can be very negative. Depends what you fear. Okay? Depends what you fear. If you fear for your life, that's positive. If you fear for your, you know, your petty little, I don't know what, you know, you fear someone's going to take your apple or something, well, that's a waste of fear, right? Because fear is a natural attribute. It's just a question of what you will apply it to, what you will invest it in, all right? But fear is a natural aspect of the human being. It's a very healthy aspect. If you don't have fear, there's something wrong, okay? Fear is very positive if you invest it in the right things. Judaism says, take that natural fear and invest it in a being beyond yourself, which will keep you straight, all right? It'll keep you dignified. It'll keep you integrated. And therefore, we find in Genesis, when Abraham said to this king Abimelech, or he said in the community that his wife is his sister, you might remember that story. So later on they realize that this is not his sister, but in fact his wife. And so the king challenged and said, why did you say she was my sister? Why did you say she was your sister? So he said, because I saw that there was no fear of God in this place. And they would kill me. They would kill me. Ah. So you see that unless a person has a sense of fear of a higher being that does in fact supervise, and I am in essence accountable to, unless that person has that, then how can I really trust their dignity and their behavior? So fear is natural. And if you don't invest it in the right place, you'll have it in the wrong place. I remember I was at someone's home with Rav Gedalia Gerfein, a friend of mine. We were watching television, okay? And this guy said, I want to put on a video that you guys would really like. I said, okay, you know, fine. So he puts on this video, and we immediately see that, you know, this video is not very modest. And we were very frightened of this video, right? He loved it, you know? And we said, oh, let's change the channel. So we went and changed the channel, right? And we changed the channel, and all of a sudden, we zoomed into one of these old black and white horror movies. Okay? And it was about these ants. Right? And immediately when we go in, you hear this really eerie kind of noise. And we say, oh, this looks interesting. And we see these ants crawling up, and then this man being, you know? And Rav Gedalia and I were laughing. This is so funny. The guy beside us was trembling. He said, hey, come on, let's turn the channel. I said, why? This is funny. No, come on. And as a grown man, and he was really frightened of it. So afterwards, Gedalia said, you see how it works? See, if you don't have your fear invested in the right place, then some of the stupidest things in the world will make you frightened, you know? And so too over here, on one level, the beginning of true wisdom, to access and realize your a priori wisdom and musar, and your ethics, so you have to have that fear that, hey, you know, there are consequences to my actions. And if I don't have a sense of consequences to my actions, then what's going to keep me straight?
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990, or in Jerusalem at country code 972-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.